Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
You're listening to 101.9 Hi FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is a new time and a new show for 2026. You will know if you've listened to the station for a while that my show for many years was at 9 o'clock on a Monday. We've now moved to the lunch-ish time slot, 12 o'clock. And we have a new name. We're called Studio 972, that is from what used to be the New Blue Review. But despite the change, in name and time slot, it is pretty much still the same show that you can expect. Your best current and culture, news from around the world and around the Jewish world. But I have had a few people ask me why the 972, Studio 972. If you have some ideas, then you can certainly tell me why you think we changed the name to this particular formulation. Because I'd be interested to see how people like it. So if you are interested, you can send us a message, 061-895-1019, 061-895-1019. Why are we renaming the show Studio Plus 972? And of course, you can use that number for anything that you want throughout the show, because it is the first show of the year in some respects, of this kind of show, rather. So we did think we'd go through what are some of the big stories that are likely to dominate, particularly the foreign policy sector, and what will make a big change in the world in 2026 that, you need to sort of know about, the big red flag. So we're going to go through a bunch of stories today on what is affecting us and the world. And I think the first one is a story which we sort of can't predict, but unfortunately need to be cognizant of. And the first one really is around the aftermath of what happens on Bondi Beach. You know, last year, 2025, this horrific shooting in Australia against a Jewish event. And I think that for some time we're likely to see that this is going to continue. Not specifically Bondi Beach, but I think targeting Jewish community and Jewish community infrastructure around the world is something that we're going to have to deal with for some time. I think it's got to do with the fact that we're still dealing with the political fallout from Gaza, the fact that we're seeing a very excitable right wing in the world as well. These things are all problems which we are going to have to deal with this year, and I think that unfortunately that's going to mean issues for Jews in the diaspora. I think if this issue comes out with the Iranians, which we're going to talk about, that could affect things as well. But essentially, Israel is more safe than it has been in the last 2 years. We could still see an attack on Iran or from Iran, and that's something that the Israelis will have to deal with. And of course, there's always terrorist issues and that sort of thing. But when you can't get to the Israelis by and large, then these groups tend to target the Jewish community. And so I think that that's going to be something which we're going to have to unfortunately deal with for quite some time going forward. But what about the macro things? What about some of the stuff which we know is coming and we can start to at least think about where do they go from here? So a number of them are election related, because when elections come, you have a lot of things that happen simultaneously. People have to get elected, which means they have to get themselves in front of cameras to get votes. They have to get money for this. So all of these things are crucial when it comes to elections. And that means that the public sphere gets very, very excitable. And we've got three major elections from our perspective that are coming up this year. The first one, let's start locally, is the South African local government elections. We have a local government elections every 5 years, it's something that we have to deal with, and that sort of comes in between our national elections. So we had one in 2024, and we'll have another one, I think, 28, 29, and in between we've got these local government elections, which have to be somewhere between now. Technically, it could be in January 2027, but that doesn't seem to be the case. So we'll have to see where it comes, but there's a lot of discussion about that it's likely to fall in November. That's the sort of time when people are talking about. It may be earlier. It could technically be in a few months' time, but that would seem to be an issue. And that is going to be the first big item on our list. And we're going to be chatting more about it just after this.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
101.9 Hi FM, this is Studio Plus 972, and it is your show. Do you know why we called it that? Let us know, 061-895-1019, and we'll be happy to take your viewpoints about the new show name. Now, what is the one of the big things going on this year is going to be the local government elections. So in 2024, we have three spheres of government. So we did the national election, and then we did the provincial election, and that's who in charge basically of the province and the country. And as a result of that, we have this GNU, and in several provinces we have a GPU, that being KZN and Gauteng as well. I don't think any of the other provinces had a coalition. I'm trying to think. I don't think Free State. Anyway, those are the three that matter, let's be honest. So that's the coalition. And now we have the local government. So local government is, most importantly from our perspective, the cities. So you've got the big metros all over the country. Cape Town, Johannesburg, Tshwane, KwaBega, which is PE, Bloemfontein, Mangaung. So all of these are now cities which will be up for grabs, and then all of these sort of local government places all over the country. And the big question is going to be, as always, what happens now to the ANC? So traditionally speaking, the ANC does worse in local government elections than it does in national government elections. Opposition parties tend to do better in cities in general. And there's a lot of back to basic stuff, potholes, robots not working, electricity outages, that they can make sort of arguments on, which are sort of bread and butter issues. And so if that holds, then the ANC is likely to drop some more. It's on 40% currently, more or less. So some of the polls have it down to sort of mid-lower 30s already. Whether that holds or not, I don't know. But there are some kinds of predictions that could see the DA actually being bigger than the ANC in some places if it really starts to drop. The other big party to watch that's having a bit of a rough time has been Action SA. So they did quite well in the previous local government election, not so well in the national election. So the question would be, do those voters go back to the DA from where it got a lot of them? Does it go to the ANC? Does it go somewhere else? That's going to be a big question going forward. And the third big party that is very important is going to be MK. So the MK, Zuma's party, Konto Esizwe, they got 15% in the last election, overtaking even Julius Malema's EFF, and a very good outcome for a first round in election. And they've even won a couple of by-elections in the last few months, which tells you that you have to take them seriously, because if people can mobilize during for a by-election, that tells you that there's growth and interest in the party in general. And in some places, this was actually a complete rout and completely disturbing the IFP and the ANC in certain places. So this is a party to watch, and there's a question about how it's going to do in the local government elections, particularly in KZN, where its sort of base is. There's some suggestion that they could take over Durban, because Durban City is made up of lots and lots and lots of small parties that are running, and if the MK can suck those up, that would put them in a very strong position against the ANC. So that would be a real big question. And then, of course, you have cities like Johannesburg, cities like Tshwane, which Pretoria. And there's some very interesting dynamics. So Tshwane is has had a few different mayors over time. In particular, the Action SA mayor took over from the DA mayor, Celia Brink, by engaging with the ANC. And that sort of has been stable, if sort of there's concerns about corruption. But the Machwane was being governed by a sort of center-right coalition. And I think that there's a good possibility that comes back after 2026 elections. The DA is likely to swallow up some of the smaller parties as people see that the city was being run better. They probably won't get the majority, but if they get like 48, 45, 46, and they can put together a smaller coalition with the FF Plus and a couple of others, that will mean that there's likely to be a stable set of service delivery for Shwane, or at least people in there who've kind of got a bit of a track record on some time of this. So that's Shwane. The big one, of course, is going to be Johannesburg. So Helen Ziller is sort of saying that she's going to run for mayor. She's not sort of saying it. She has saying it. There's suggestions now that she might even become a councillor before the election. And if you look at the numbers, it would certainly be possible to have a GNU type council where you would have the DA and the ANC, but I don't think that's what the DA want. They want to get as much as they can so that they can try and create a coalition in a similar way to what Shwane might look like, as I said before, sort of your center-right parties, ACTB, FF+, IFP, a couple of others that might fill the void and work with the DA on different positions. One of the big ones, of course, is the PA, because they don't have a great working relationship with them. And the numbers suggest that they could do very well. Opposition parties, as I've said, tend to do well on what's called differential turnout. So it means that ANC voters stay home for government, local government elections, and there's a rise in the number of opposition voters, and that tends to give outsized importance to how the percentages go in terms of these votes. The DA might be in a position where it has to work with the ANC. I don't think that's what it wants. But the way I'm looking at it at the moment, if you look at some of these numbers, it imagines to me and seems to me to be like watching a game of rugby in Johannesburg where the Oak kicks the ball down the field and it bounces and someone is running after the ball. And it's really a question of which way does the ball bounce? Because if it bounces the right way, that's sort of an instantaneous try. But if it bounces the wrong way, you end up with a knock-on and you have to go all the way back to the beginning. And that's where I think this local government election in a Johannesburg setting is looking to take us. If people come out and vote properly, and there's a proper galvanization, you could very well see a DA-led coalition running the city for the first time since Dr. Umpho Palatsi did so. I think it was like 2018 or something like that, 2017, I can't even remember. And this time without the EFF's participation, which made it so difficult the last time around. And if it does, it could be a game changer for Gauteng. There's only one other metro or local government group which is run by the DA, and that's Midvaal, which has been consistently a DA place for many, many years. And so having a major city run by a DA coalition that was stable would be a real question. There's a minor question about if they'll lose Cape Town and have to go into a coalition there. I don't foresee it. I think it'll be tight. But the mayor is very popular there, Jordan Hill-Lewis. There's some interesting questions about Durban, as you said, East London, even Bloemfontein. Ekurhuleni has question marks surrounding it. Even the west of Johannesburg as well, Randburg type areas, not Randburg, what's it? Krugersdorp kind of area, so Mogale City. So all of these places are up for grabs, and it's going to be a real kind of threat. But the truth is that the way that the ANC is polling at the moment, and the fact that they just don't seem to be addressing many of the issues that are concerned to voters, mean that it looks like that they will continue to fall in the polls. And what's even more ridiculous if you look at what they've been saying in the last while, it's almost like they're going to run on an international relations platform, try and make it about imperialism and Venezuela and, of course, Palestine or whatever. They haven't learned their lesson from the national elections. So that is also something to watch out for, where they try and divert from the local government stuff to the international relations stuff. So that is where we are at. And look out for where the South African national local government elections are going to be in 2026.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM in your new time slot with your favorite current affairs and culture show, Studio Plus 972. And we're still asking if you can figure out why we called the show this. 061-895-1019. 061-895-1019 is what you have to answer, the way you have to call for this. So there we go. So we ran through our first big event that's coming up this year, the South African local government elections, and what will happen if the ANC disappears as a ruling party of our cities come the end of this year. Then the national government elections of the US, or actually, no, they are the midterm elections, rather. We're going to get onto some national government elections in a minute. The midterm elections of the United States are coming up, and that's also in November, or is in November. And what happens with the United States midterms is that normally what happens is you have someone voting for the president, effectively, but this is a vote for the entire Congress. So basically, each area in the United States has every, I don't know how many, tens of thousands of people. And if once you have tens of thousands of people, then you get a representative. So there's more in a place like New York, which is heavily populated, and less in a place like Ohio, which is more deserty, I guess. So all of these places have representatives. And the American system works that you have something else called the Senate. And the Senate has two representatives per state. So there's 50 states in America, and there are two senators for that. And what happens in a midterm is that all of the members of Congress get voted on, and a third of the members of Senate get voted on. I think a senatorial term is something like 7 years, something like that, 6 years. So they run a third at a time, and the Congress members run on a 4 year term. So that's the midterms. And what's interesting about the midterms is the following, is that in the olden days, if you can call them that, what used to happen is you'd have a district where there would be lots of different people who would be in that district, and there were very few safe seats. So a Republican or a Democrat could run based on a basket of issues that they thought would be important for those people in that area, but you would not have enough, let's say, like, hardcore Republicans to necessarily just win the seat outright talking to them. You'd sort of have to talk to them, but also talk to the Democrats in that seat. And that would mean that you couldn't go completely nuts on one or other issue. You sort of had to kind of be in the center of a lot of stuff, because it's otherwise you just wouldn't get elected. And what's happened over time is this thing called the Great Sort. And what's the Great Sort has meant is that people started moving to places where people thought like them politically. Typically, if you're a Democratic voter, you come from a major metropolitan area, mostly on the East Coast of or West Coast of America, New York, Los Angeles, Boston, etc. And then more rural areas became more Republican. And what's happened there is that you can run on a very, very much more aggressive ticket, because you know that it doesn't matter whether you have Republican support or not, or Democrat support or not, because you can get voted on just on a Democratic or Republican ticket. And so there's a disincentive to be more moderate in your views. On top of that, things like social media mean that people can organize more effectively in small groups, and can organize more effectively on small issues. And in particular in the American system, what this means is that they have something called a primary. So I want to be the Democratic candidate for the election. Then they run a sort of mini election inside the Democratic Party, and the person who wins that then becomes the person who's going to represent the Democrats, for example, in the congressional race for the Republican or an independent. And these primaries, you have to really be super interested and understand, because a lot of them are complicated and they have weird systems, and you have the caucuses, and it's a whole, each Congress and each state runs them differently. So it's like a whole thing if you want to vote for a primary. And it means only the most excited voters will pitch up for a primary. And the most excited voters also tend to be the most extreme. So you have this process where you're going to get more extreme voters coming up in the primary. A good example is in New York, where someone like AOC was she comes from I think the Bronx, Brooklyn. No, not Brooklyn, Bronx. I think she is the Bronx, and there was a long time kind of elderly gentleman there who spent a lot of time there, and then she decided she was going to primary him. It's what's called primarying. And took a bunch of quite extreme views, and people turned out and got rid of this guy who had been there for like 50 years, and she's now got that seat, and it's kind of more difficult to get rid of her, because how are you going to be more aggressive than AOC in your district? Because she's part of the squad, and she's super progressive and left, and all of these things. So there's a good example, and it means that other sitting politicians are now worried about what might be coming their way down the pike on this particular issue. And it means that you get a very extreme Congress, where you get lots of people who are voted in with very extreme mandates, and people who will watch their representatives, and if that person steps out of line, then get rid of them in the next cycle. And so it doesn't lend itself to what used to happen in Congress, where people would sort of work together from cross parties to get things done on the same side of the aisle. Now people just kind of go at each other quite a lot. And the big issue in Congress coming up is that the Republican platform, or the Republican Congress, is actually very limited. I think they only have, it's not a lot. It's, I think, a 6-person majority, something like that. It can be lower when people are not there. Some people have retired, etc. And so there's a bunch of Congress seats, and there's a real question about whether, in fact, the Republicans are going to be able to hold Congress and have the majority there. And this will mean, if this happens, that once the Democrats have the majority, they can get everyone to vote the way they want. Because if there's one thing Democrats know, what they don't always know what they stand for. What they definitely don't like is Donald Trump. And so this is something which is going to be a big issue. If they get into power, they can impeach him again like they did before, and they can start to roll back some of his legislative issues. And it would mean that sort of Trump would be a kind of a lame duck president for the rest of his presidency. And so that would be a real question about what his agenda would look like with a democratic Congress, especially as they move towards the next election cycle in 2028-29, when he runs for president, but he can't run for president. So it would be a kind of a question about would he run for vice president again? Would people want him to? Who would be the presidential candidate, etc.? But you basically reach what you could call peak Trump. And we may even be reaching that before the elections, as people start to jostle for position about what comes after him. So have a look for that. And that has also ramifications for South Africa, because there's a number of pieces of legislation in the Congress at the moment which would probably be voted on between March and November, when which might sanction South African politicians, might affect the way that we do trade with America, might affect all sorts of things. And these are things that we have to sort of be concerned about, and would make a difference, actually, if the Democrats got in, because that would be blocked. So there will be this 6-month period, which could make or break at a legislative level South Africa's relationship with the United States going forward. And of course, also would a Congress that is more Democrat leaning could also affect the way that Israel operates, etc. So these the midterms will have a big impact on the elections, and so expect that the US is going to get a little bit more crazy over the next 6 months as it runs into all of these things. So that is on the American side, and something which is you're going to have to look out for the rest of the year. Then lastly is on the electoral cycle is the Israeli elections. So Israel has to have elections sometime this year. There was a question about if it might be earlier this year. I don't think it's going to be earlier. Probably also be later this year. And of course, this is going to be an election which I suspect will be dominated, and I think it's easy to suspect that, by the events of October 7th. There haven't really been elections since that period. And actually, from a strictly electoral perspective, this particular coalition that Bibi Netanyahu holds has been one of the more stable ones in Israeli history, and probably will get closer than many others to finishing its term, which is really unusual, actually. And so there's two things which are going to be on the agenda. The first one is October 7th. And all the issues that have emanated from that. Remember, after major wars, there tend to be some fallout, although not necessarily. In 73, for example, Golda Meir held on to her premiership, even though she presided over the Yom Kippur War, which was widely considered to be a disaster. But then by 77, she completely had lost her coalition. So it can have big effects. And when you have big crises in Israeli politics, then it brings new people who otherwise would not have been engaged in politics into the discussion. So famously, Naftali Bennett, who was a soldier in the IDF in the Lebanon War, he had been a successful businessman. He was in the war, and then that war had been a bit of a disaster, so he decided he wanted to change things, and then he got involved in politics. After the cottage cheese protests, there was a famous set of protests about 10, 15 years ago now, where the price of cottage cheese sparked a sort of couple of months of people sleeping in tents in Tel Aviv protesting the price of cottage cheese. And from that, a number of people got into politics around a more centrist party that existed for a while. So for something as traumatic as October 7th, I would not be surprised if we start to see flooding of the zone of new parties, new people getting involved. Already we're seeing something like Einat Wilf, who you might know as a Israeli public intellectual, and she's creating a new party called the Oz Party. And of course, you'll see other parties that are likely could and whatever having people run in. And so that dynamic is something that's hard to predict. We don't know who's going to get in. We don't know who's going to bring in their own support base and what that might look like. Although, in some respects, at this point, Netanyahu is polling pretty solidly, as are some of his partners. So it would be interesting to see what happens there with these political parties. So that's the one element which is going to be important in the Israeli election. And the second element will be really participation in the war. So Netanyahu's coalition is basically people composed of two kinds of people, people from Likud and the religious right, and then the Haredim. And the religious right and has, in terms of the coalition, disproportionately had their sons and daughters and work disrupted by the war. And in past coalitions, the religious right is prepared to put up with the Haredim because they're just also religious, and they are kind of in some respects similar from a religious perspective, but they're happy to have with them in the government. But because the Haredim have refused to serve in the war, this has created an enormous amount of tension for the first time in the bloc. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with this, especially with these attempts to now draft Haredim into the army post 7th of October. And if that is resisted by the Haredim and it breaks up the coalition, then you might see an election happening sooner. And a real question about whether the Haredim will be let back in, whether the extreme right would be left back in, or at least the religious right and the extreme right, who are also part of this, or whether there would be a sort of grand coalition of Israeli politics, which has happened in the past. As one commentator has put it, Israelis, 80% of Israelis agree about 80% of the issues, but they're kind of being held by this 20% coalition, which most Israelis don't agree on. So this is going to be the real dynamic. Unlike here, where elections are run on the economy, on security, actually, in some respects, those aren't issues that really dominate Israeli politics. There's no like peace camp for Iran, for example, that says, you know, he has a political platform for us to do peace talks. Pretty much everyone understands that Iran's a problem. You need to fight them. The Palestinians have shown themselves to be completely unable to provide a proper security and the partner for peace. So the security stuff, most people sort of at least agree on some elements of the problem. Not everyone agrees on the solutions, or if there is a solution. And so that is a part of the issue for them. And really, what are the things that are driving Israeli politics is really personality. So do you like Netanyahu or don't you? And then around that are a bunch of culturally related issues, like women's rights issues, and religion and state issues. For example, should buses run on Shabbat or whatever? These are all things that tend to now run Israeli politics as well, although obviously the security question in terms of accountability is going to be very high. And I think that depending on where the security situation is at, if there's a war with Iran, if there's peace or whatever, I think that will make a big difference, because October 7th, from an electoral perspective, is going to be nearly 3 years in the rearview mirror. And other issues might actually burn up the frame. So that's the Israeli elections and the American elections. When we come back after the break, we're going to be looking at Iran and some stuff on the Abraham Accords and some of the other of South Africa's foreign policy positions here on 101.9 Chai FM.
From sunrise to Shabbat, from Johannesburg to the world.
Chai FM, you're resilient, you're honest and true, you're loyal, and you're faithful to us. Thank you very much.
This is Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, studio +972. On your radio with me, Benji Shulman, in our brand new time slot from 9 to 12 to 1, no longer 9 till 10. And we are excited to be with you as we look at some of the bigger issues that are going to be focused on here in 2026, things that you can look at, mark your calendars by. Now, something which is going to be sort of connected to one another, I think, is going to be the Abraham Accords and Iran. So we're seeing now multiple geographic protests in Iran that were started because, unlike previous Iran protests, because Iran does have a lot of protests from time to time, something like 8,000 different recorded protest events in the last few years. But this time around, and often it's cultural and religious. So the last time around we had a major protest event was about 2021-22. And there it was the Woman Life Freedom protest, and that was all about the fact that the regime was not allowing, basically an Iranian woman had been killed for not wearing her hijab apparently properly, and that sparked off a bunch of protests. Previously, there was something called the Green Revolution, which was over a stolen election and there was a lot of protests there. This time, the protests are economic, and that's because the Iranians have spent literally billions of dollars on their nuclear program and their program of Hezbollah and Hamas and proxies, and that's all been decimated by Israel. Then a lot of sanctions have kicked back in from the what was called the JCPOA, basically the nuclear deal. So American sanctions have come in, European sanctions have come in, and Iran is a country that hasn't looked after its infrastructure and has had a lot of problems. And so in particular, inflation has gone out of control. I saw something earlier where they're talking like 50% inflation, which means every day you're poorer by half. That's a lot. And so people have actually gotten very annoyed and started protesting. And unlike previously where it was angry women or students or politicos, here the more conservative parts of the society have been protesting, the merchant class. This is actually where it started in the bazaar in Tehran. People started protesting. And now it's snowballed into a general demand for the end of the Iranian regime. Generally speaking, Iranians are not very actually religious or tied into religious. Not most of them, but a lot of them are not even Muslim. There's a lot of minorities and people who don't sort of really like each other, etc. And so it's being held together by a kind of 15% of the population, which is extremely radically religious. They're Shia Muslims, and Shia Muslims, Islam, not Muslims, but the Islam itself was persecuted violently for many, many centuries throughout the Middle East. And so it's also got a bit of a paranoid style in its politics. And this all creates a situation where those people, a small number of them, are fanatics and they have the guns. And so the question is going to be, can the rest of the society sort of overcome that? And what role are outsiders going to be playing in helping to do this? Because the Iranians also have a history of outsiders coming in and interfering, the Soviet Union, the British, the Americans. And this has caused all sorts of interference over years. And caused Iranians to be suspicious of outsiders. Now, nonetheless, Donald Trump has sort of said, look, if you start shooting protesters, start cutting out, we're actually going to get involved. What's interesting is that they've shut down the entire internet down in Iran, and there's even reports now of them trying to go after Starlink, which is Elon Musk's thing, which had been able to transmit, and the Iranians seem to be trying to find a way to block that as well, which tells you that they might be committing massacres at the moment. They have reports of hospitals overflowing and all sorts of things like that with the injured. And the IRGC, which is the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, which is sort of it's not the police or the army. It's like a specific party political violent group that is now being put on the streets instead of just the normal police and the army. And if we start to see that, that could crush we could start to see a change in how things are going there, because either the regime sort of wins out and there's a proper takeover by the fanatics, or you start to see a change in you'll start to see a change in the regime in general if people start to defect. Now, some people have come in here and said, just messaging us, have they ever addressed local issues? This is from Carol. Please explain the name of the show. Thank you, Gail. We also have one. No, that was from Carol. Excuse me. One from Gail. What does Gail want from us? According to Google, your name means chosen. Gail wants an explanation of why does it mean chosen. Okay, I'm not sure where we got the word chosen from, but if it does mean that, that's quite exciting. Like, I hadn't actually known that. And we are getting towards the end of this particular segment. So I will reveal all what it means in a minute. So thank you for sending those through. We'll do it just after the break. I'm going to get done with this Iranian stuff. And so stay tuned just after the break in a few minutes, where we will reveal the show and what it means. But this Iranian thing, let's assume it goes well, right? And actually there is a change in regime in Iran. That would be amazing, and it would be actually world changing for the region. For one thing, it's not possible, in my estimation, to actually have peace in the Middle East whilst Iran in its current regime is formed, because even if the Palestinians were all made up of Mahatma Gandhis and Mother Teresa's, then it still wouldn't matter, because Iran has an interest in wiping out Israel. And so whenever the Palestinians would get any kind of power, they would immediately be put under pressure and overthrown by these mullahs who want to try and create a Hamas in their midst. And so if Iran was to drop a lot of the funding that we were seeing in the Middle East that was going towards terrorism, a lot of the interference, a lot of all these sorts of things would actually disappear. And remember that when Iran was still Persia at that stage, Israel actually had a very good relationship with it. And this is something which is a big deal in terms of that. Somebody else messaging me about Iran saying, isn't MTN about 60% of the cell phone providers there? And this is from Annie May. Thank you for that, actually. That's such a good point, because I was going to move on to what it means for South Africa. There's a huge court case coming this year at some point. The Constitutional Court is going to rule on whether it can, on whether it has jurisdiction, or South Africa has jurisdiction, to look into a corruption case of MTN getting the cell phone signal rights for Iran, and questions about whether it was done corruptly. Interestingly, the person at the time was the chairman, was Cyril Ramaphosa. If this court case goes ahead, I think it could be a really big political question. And I think, as you say, Annie, this also is a question about what Iran and MTN might actually have to pay for locking down telephony in Iran during the protests. But if this goes well and the regime changes, it's a very big and important step forward for peace in the Middle East. So let's just be with the protesters and carry on. I'm Benji Shulman. Stay listening, because when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Abraham Accords, and also, for all you curious folk out there, what does our new name mean here on 101.9 Chai FM?
Chai FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
101.9 Chai FM, and we're talking about what is to come in 2026, potentially to look out for. One of the other big things I want to talk about, as I said, Iran, if it goes down, the current regime, it can be very peaceful. But the other kind of big person in the playground there is Saudi Arabia. And for a long time, just before October 7th in particular, there was a question, are the Saudis going to make peace with Israel and effectively end the Arab-Israeli conflict? Sadly, I think that ship may have sailed. We're seeing a lot of flags from the Saudis kind of saying that they're not really that interested. They want certain things from the Americans that they can't get because of how Trump is and how the elections work there. They're not happy about the Palestinian issue. Not that they care that much about it, but they still have other things to worry about. But basically, they've come to the conclusion that they also want to be a big power in the Middle East. And one of the big drivers was this Iranian question. And since the Iranians are now weaker, there's less of an incentive for the Saudis to actually have a proper peace treaty with Israel when they can already do quite a lot on that. So sadly, I think that the Saudis are out of the picture for a while. Things may change. You never know. But I wasn't sure about it. But really, when I saw the Israeli recognition of Somaliland, that told me that they would – would not be that, you know, they sort of count, they're looking for smaller partners now rather than the Saudis, because if you could get the Saudis on board, then a country like Somaliland would quickly come on board as well as Somalia. So it wouldn't be necessary. But the fact that they went for Somaliland tells you that they're picking lower hanging fruits and trying to keep the Abraham Accords going that way. That Somaliland thing is a problem for Saudis, because it actually strengthens in a funny way the hand of the UAE, who they're busy having a bit of a kerfuffle with at the moment. And so the Saudis are no longer that interested in the Abraham Accords, which is sad. But it does open space for smaller players. And the truth is, some work needs to be done on strengthening the Abraham Accords with the current players. Bahrain, the UAE, Morocco is doing a lot of defense work with Israel at the moment. So maybe those need some work. And traditionally, you know, peacemaking has come in phases in the Middle East. We had a big phase now. Some additional may come on board. But the Saudis remain elusive. My call for 2026. And now, another call is for everyone who wanted to know why are we calling it? So it is Studio plus 972, because that is the dialing code that you use when you want to phone Israel. So it's Israel related, but it's also a dialing code, so you have to phone, so it's from somewhere else. So it's really the connection between Israel and the rest of the Jewish world. As I've said, it is our show is your favorite Jewish current and culture and current affairs show. And so that is a way that we can name it. And that is it. And so we will see you again next week. Thank you to everyone who helps put the show together. Craig, who pushes all the big red buttons, up Vusi on the sound. And to you, dear listeners, please join us next week on Plus 972 Studio here on High FM.